This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
there are 7 pregnant women. About 15 migrants have serious burns from gasoline, and there are others with hypothermia, and many of them are just exhausted and dehydrated.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna describing the condition of migrants who were stranded on the migrant ship the Aquarius in the Mediterranean Sea. We'll have the latest development on this story coming up.
Also in the Gambia, a commission of inquiry is investigating the financial activities of exiled President Yahya Jammeh. And the first meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader produced a broad declaration to rid the Korean Peninsula of nuclear weapons.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the International Criminal Court today ruled to immediately release former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba following his stunning acquittal in appeals last week at the Hague-based court. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris that Bemba still faces sentencing on separate charges of witness tampering, but his freedom may upend presidential elections in the DRC that are scheduled for December.
Judge Bertrand Schmidt was clear to separate the question of Jean-Pierre Bemba's release from a separate case at the International Criminal Court in which he awaits sentencing for witness tampering.
The chamber emphasized again that the current status conference solely concerns Mr. Bemba's continuing detention while he awaits the renewed determination of his sentence.
Bemba faces up to 5 years in jail and a fine in the witness tampering case, which he lost in appeals. But he won a major victory last Friday in the main case against him. ICC appeals court judges overturned convictions against him for atrocities committed by his MLC forces in the Central African Republic in the early 2000s. In a 3-2 decision, they said Bemba could not be responsible for their actions, some of which took place when he was the DRC's vice president. Bemba's lawyer, Melinda Taylor, argued he should be immediately freed, pending sentencing in the witness tampering case, and that he did not present a flight risk.
The fact that Mr. Bemba has been detained for over 10 years in total and has served over 4.5 times his initial sentence is itself a special circumstance that militates in favor of his release.
But prosecution lawyers argued Bemba's witness tampering conviction rules out any near-term release. The overturning of Bemba's main conviction is a major setback to ICC prosecutors. He was the highest-ranking official the court convicted since it began operating in 2002. The associate director of Human Rights Watch's International Justice Program, Elise Kepler, says the ruling raises broader questions about the ICC's credibility and effectiveness and may shock those who survived the CAR violence.
The real loss here is that we are now in a situation where victims of the crimes in 2002 and 2003 in the Central African Republic are left without any redress.
Bemba's lawyers say he wants to join his family in Belgium, but his legal fate may also play into the DRC's elections. Bemba was once President Joseph Kabila's main rival.
Time will tell, but this is obviously going to have big reverberations in Congo's political scene.
Despite his detention, Bemba came in third in a recent presidential preference survey in the DRC. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Italy's Coast Guard today said an Italian Navy ship and a Coast Guard ship will escort the migrant ship the Aquarius to Valencia, Migrants are being transferred to the two ships after being stranded on the Aquarius in the Mediterranean between Italy and Malta. Both nations refused to allow the vessel to dock in their port. The migrants are from Sudan, Eritrea, Nigeria, and Ghana. Seven women on board are pregnant and others are suffering from serious injuries. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the latest developments, including the fallout that has occurred after Italy refused to accept the migrants.
Well, the Italian Coast Guard has begun to transfer migrants from the Aquarius onto two vessels. One is a Coast Guard vessel and one is an Italian Navy ship. Only some of the migrants, 400 of the 629, are going to be transferred to these vessels, and 229 will remain on the Aquarius, and they will be also planning to disembark in Valencia as well. UNICEF and the Catholic charity, the Order of Malta, will have aid workers on board these two ships, but it will take 4 days for these vessels to reach Valencia.
Also, I understand just this morning there were some audio messages that came from the ship. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. An MSF official was confirming precisely what was going on. He also said that he had informed the migrants about what was happening. There was a lot of confusion yesterday, and many of them were very upset. They were afraid because the boat wasn't moving. They were concerned that they were going to be sent back to Libya. And one of them, in a voice message that was sent through to the Foreign Press Club here in Rome, one migrant said, "We are not going back to Libya. It is a living hell where you have guns pointed on you at all times. We don't care where we go. We are just happy to be free out of Libya, and we really appreciate the fact that we were saved." This ship has 629. There are seven pregnant women. About 15 migrants have serious burns from gasoline, and there are others with hypothermia, and many of them are just exhausted and dehydrated. So they will be very relieved to reach land, but this ordeal is not over yet.
What will happen to them once they do reach Valencia?
Well, it seems that that will be the country where they will be accepted and processed, formally processed, since neither Italy nor Malta wanted to take that responsibility. It seems that that will be their destination. It's not clear whether they will stay in Spain or be transferred to other countries. But incidentally, the Spanish government did step in because it said that it had to avert any kind of human emergency. Today, the Justice Minister, the Spanish Justice Minister, Dolores Delgado, said this was not a question of goodness or generosity, but human rights. And she even suggested that Italy could face international sanctions for violating human rights and not accepting these migrants in Italy.
And what is the Prime Minister saying about this, the Prime Minister of Italy?
Well, the Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte says Italy has asked for a gesture of solidarity from Europe, and this is the kind of gesture that has been made. We've seen a harder line from the Interior Minister, the anti-immigrant Interior Minister Matteo Salvini, who is determined to close Italy's ports to migrants and is determined to get greater responsibility taken by other European countries. He described what happened yesterday as a victory, while people were protesting in the streets that it really wasn't adequate in terms of protecting people's human rights here in Rome. A spokesman for the French president, Emmanuel Macron, described Italy's position as sickening today. So we're going to see a lot more debate, I think, in Europe. And certainly Italy is demanding greater responsibility and a greater response from other European countries to share the burden of incoming migrants that are arriving across the Mediterranean, particularly in this particular season.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
For decades, the government of Ethiopia had one of the worst human rights records in East Africa. So many were skeptical in January when the government announced it would release thousands of political prisoners. But Amnesty International says the government seems to be making good on that promise. Indeed, both hope and caution were on display at the recent Amnesty International conference in New York. VOA's Adam Phillips was there to gauge the mood.
At a recent gathering of activists, journalists, and others, Amnesty International's Nick Agotu lays out the hope and the fear many have for Ethiopia.
Over 8,000 prisoners have been released. A new prime minister is in place, and the Ethiopian parliament has voted to lift the state of emergency. But let's be clear, blood has been shed, and many have died fighting for their rights. No government in the world is perfect. That is why we cannot sit back and be complacent. If the structures and institutions of governance are not reformed, then these initial reforms we have seen in Ethiopia will not bring the needed fundamental changes in the people's lives.
Ethiopian journalist and human rights activist Skinder Nega, who was at the gathering, agreed with Agotu.
Of course, we don't know how much change that will come. We'll have to wait and see. I think there's recognition within the ruling party that the people's demand should be heeded.
Nega spent 9 years in prison, much of it in seclusion, for speaking out against government atrocities before being released in February. Although Nega was one of Ethiopia's best-known prisoners of conscience, he says that thousands of Ethiopians had suffered in jails as much as he had.
Tens of thousands, if you take the whole country into consideration. Was I treated badly in prison? Yeah. This is a third world prison. I was treated as any prisoner would be treated in an authoritarian country, which is no respect for human rights that you take for granted wherever there's democracy. But then we had this tremendous support from the international community, which meant a lot to us, being mindful that we were not forgotten. We want freedom. This is a universal urge. All humans have this urge innate. And no country, including the U.S., by the way, has got its freedom without paying a price. So we too, as a nation, have to pay a price for it.
Solyana Gebremichael directs the Ethiopia Human Rights Project from exile in Washington, D.C. But back in Ethiopia, she was a member of the Zone 9 Bloggers Collective. In 2015, while she was abroad, Gebremichael's colleagues were arrested and jailed for their blogs, tweets, and posts about human rights. She was charged in absentia with terrorism and committing outrages against the Constitution. Today, she feels a powerful mix of emotions, including survivor's guilt, grief, and anger.
The one side is it helps you to be motivated. But I guess the other thing is really makes you vulnerable. It makes you more emotional because now it's not a number. It's a human being that you know. You cannot talk to them. You cannot really touch them. You cannot ask them. Even though you get information, it's not really similar with connecting with the individuals that you were really close. Yeah. So I guess these were a lot of emotions. But all of them goes to I should do something about it at the end.
While activists and ordinary Ethiopians are wary of the new government, Prime Minister Abiy has been traveling the region to improve relationships with neighboring governments. His government last week unexpectedly lifted the state of emergency imposed when his predecessor, Haile Mariam Desalegn, resigned. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Coming up on 18 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Researchers say 9 of Africa's oldest and largest baobab trees have died over the past 10 years. In a report published in the scientific journal Nature Plants, the scientists say there were no signs of disease and that they may have been killed by climate change. The French press agency says all of the trees were in southern Africa, Zimbabwe, Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, and Zambia. The baobab can live for up to 3,000 years. The oldest tree found in Zimbabwe is thought to be 2,500 years old. The largest in Namibia was over 30 meters tall and 25 meters wide. The baobab is the biggest and longest living flowering tree found largely in Africa's savanna region. It stores water and provides fruit and leaves eaten by humans and animals. It has an unusual look with twisted roots growing toward the sky. The team of Romanian, American, and South African researchers collected data on the size, age, and wood volume of more than 60 baobabs between 2005 and 2017. The scientists say further study is needed to determine what is killing the trees.
In the Gambia, a commission of inquiry investigating the financial activities of exiled President Yahya Jammeh has frozen assets belonging to some officials of the former administration. They include former central bank governor Amadou Koli. This followed a ruling by the Jammeh Commission linking the officials to financial crimes allegedly committed by Jammeh. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports for VOA.
The Janet Commission has found that millions of dollars were withdrawn from the central bank under Jammeh's directive. The funds were meant for national development, but Jammeh allegedly pocketed them. Former senior army officials, Jammeh's close ADs, and officials of the former government have been named in the financial scandal. The former officials have been accused of aiding and abetting Jammeh in committing financial crimes against the government. Amadou Koli, the former central bank governor, is among the officials whose assets have been frozen.
My reaction is one of surprise and not quite agreeing to the judgment. I have no idea as to what went into the judgment. If we go by what he stated, I would react by saying that I don't agree that I'm a close associate of ex-president Jammeh, not in any way.
The commission order also prevents Koli and others from selling, assigning, or moving their frozen assets. Koli served as central bank governor from December 3, 2010 to May of 2017. He was fired with other senior bank officials shortly after President Adama Barrow came to power.
But as I said, that's what the order stated, that irregular withdrawals were being done under my approval or my authority. That is a statement of fact. You may recall that in my testimony, I have really indicated that, yes, this is not regular at all, not on letterhead. But this is the way ex-President Jammeh has been operating, based on my experience.
Speaking in an interview with the Fatu Network, an online Gambian TV platform, Koli admitted that Jammeh's financial transactions at the bank were questionable.
I believe that that was the case because if you have a situation where the president, who ought to know, we all ought to know, you know, I would use the word refuse, you know, to do so. And we do not have any option. I personally do not have any option, but to devise, a means by which those that come with those claims, statement, be it a military officer, be it a protocol officer, be it a secretary general, you know, would be committed, signing on to that statement.
Jammeh is living in exile in Equatorial Guinea after a humiliating defeat in the 2016 elections ended his 22-year rule. Koli says he is not convinced that absconding from the country at the time was the best decision.
Well, let me restate what I stated as part of my testimony, and that is resignation, absconding options. I took the decision, not to, with the belief that, look, sense would, prevail. But more importantly, that he knew what he was doing, and I have every belief that he's the guy directing these people since, as you said, the mid-90s.
Koli's fate will be decided pending the outcome of the ongoing probe spearheaded by the Janet Commission. He could face criminal charges, possible jail time, if the commission recommends prosecution.
The good thing is that, look, we live in an era where everybody, I personally believe that everybody would be treated fairly and is being treated, fairly as per the law. That's what we enjoy at the moment. And I'm not surprised that there is that window of opportunity where anytime I should decide, I would engage, the commission on this matter.
The commission has also frozen assets belonging to the former managing director of Gambia Sports Authority, Momodou Lamine Djiba, Gambia's former spy chief, Yankuba Badji, and Tariq Moussa, a Lebanese businessman. For VOA Africa, this is Pandere Mbai reporting.
The first meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader produced a broad declaration to rid the Korean Peninsula of nuclear weapons. President Donald Trump hailed today's deal as very comprehensive. Negotiators still must resolve differences between Washington's call for complete nuclear dismantlement before sanctions are eased and Pyongyang's demand that concessions be linked to incremental progress. Trump says he agreed to halt U.S.-South Korean war games, and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agreed to repatriate the remains of U.S. prisoners of war and service members missing in action from the Korean War. In an interview with VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren, Trump said his hard line toward the North helped bring Kim to the negotiating table.
I'm very proud of it. It starts a process, you know. That could have ended up in a war. That could have ended up with many millions of people. You know North Korea very well. Seoul has 28 million people. That could have ended up with millions of people dead, and we're going to end up with a deal.
More talks are planned in South Korea. Reaction to the deal was mixed. Some people see the summit as a breakthrough that could lead to a lasting peace. Others are skeptical, given the North's history of breaking promises, particularly about its nuclear weapons.
In a bid to promote the health of the nation and future generations, the government of Zimbabwe is bolstering its school health programs. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has details.
The new program includes health screening, health education, and water sanitation. The policy also will push physical activity to cultivate the culture of keeping healthy through exercise. Dr. David Parerenyatwa is the Minister of Health and Child Care Services.
This policy entails principally that now in our schools, particularly the primary schools, we will have a coherent health policy. In the past, this was very uncoordinated. Other schools would provide a clinic, others would provide a nurse, others would not even do anything.
Zimbabwe ranks 136th out of 175 nations on an index of child welfare that Save the Children issued earlier this month. This renewed effort at improving child health combines the work of the Ministry of Health and Child Care Services and the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education. The Education Ministry will lead the work on the ground. Parerenyatwa says the policy will encompass schools in remote areas. Professor Paul Mavima is the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education.
There are two things that are happening there. One is just the provision of basic health information. The second aspect is issues related to prevention as well as cure of the diseases that may affect our learners.
Collaborative work within the two ministries is not new. Currently, they have been rolling out the human papilloma virus vaccine in schools. The new policy has been under development for years, but Mavima says a long wait was necessary.
It's never too late for anything. There's always a time for rolling out. The preparations for this were long because we wanted to do a good thing, but we picked it up, I think, around 2015. We even did studies in regional countries to see, for example, South Africa, how they are running their program, and it has just matured now.
He adds that the national ministries will need to reach out to their local and global partners to beef up the government's resources for the project. For VOA, this is Kudzai Nawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted the controversial state of emergency imposed across the country 3 months ago. We'll examine the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.